Based on hundreds of millions of real-world tests, the experts at Ookla Speedtest have spoken. T-Mobile is now the best mobile network in America. So you can keep up with all the MLB action from the ballpark to the backcountry because they've got the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever. Oh, and did I mention the largest satellite-to-mobile network? They're way ahead making sure that the fans experience every pitch, play, and post-game moment. So whether you're streaming the game out and about, checking stats on the road, or experiencing ballpark perks with Magenta status, you're ready to stay connected wherever your fandom takes you. Head over to T-Mobile.com/network to switch to the best network. For baseball fans, it's better over here. Based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence, data first half 2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
Welcome to the Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome in to another episode of the Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross, brought to you by Rotoballer. This is episode 308. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Eric Cross. And with me, as usual, is my 80 gray co-host, Mr. Chris Clay. Chris, how's your weekend, bud?
Man, just baseball and counting down the days till another baby. So getting pretty close, man. So trying to get all the baseball I can at this point because probably hit the paternity list for at least a week from games. So we'll see how it all goes. But yeah, it's coming, man.
Yeah, countdown. We're at what, like about 2 weeks or so?
2 weeks, yeah. June 3rd is the due date, so 2 weeks from tomorrow. So getting close.
Man, that really snuck up. I swear it was like you were like just telling me, and that was what, 4 or 5 months ago at this point. And man, it's
time is a thief.
It's coming. Yeah, you'll have to put you on the paternity leave for a week. But well worth it, obviously. So
right.
That's awesome, man. So close. Getting really excited. I can see that look on your face.
Oh, yeah. I mean, as excited, I guess, as I can be. I'm a little nervous, but, yeah, I'm excited.
That's human. You wouldn't be human if you weren't nervous. I don't think I've ever met anybody that was this close to having a baby do, even if it would. It doesn't matter if it's your first or your eighth. I mean, you're going to be nervous no matter
that's
what.
That's true. Very true.
But we got a lot of baseball here to talk about. Another edition of Three Up, Three Down with hitters this time. Got a fun group of names. Very interesting group of names as well. Talk some middle infielders that are starting to heat up. You know, a pitcher that's breaking out this year. Some minor league promotions. Not really a lot of major league promotions lately. But some fun players getting the bump up from one level to the next in the minors. We'll talk them too. But before we do, the usual housekeeping. You can find us on Twitter. Chris is at RotoClegg. I'm at EricCross04. Show is at ToolShedPod. If you enjoy this podcast, please rate and review. Make sure to check out both of our personal platforms, thedynastydugout.com and ToolShedFantasy.com for more work from each of us. And, of course, check out all the other great things going on over at Rotoballer. Top-notch content, tools, and more to help you win this fantasy season. Use that code TOOLSHED. Get you 10% off any premium package, baseball, basketball, football, whatever you want, over at rotoballer.com. I'll start with some middle infielders here. We got Bryson Stott and Joey Ortiz. We'll start with Stott here, who's quietly been really, really good of late, up to 5 home runs and 12 steals in 168 plate appearances, slashing 279, 393, 456, and more walks than strikeouts so far this season. And again, really hitting up over the last like 2-3 weeks or so. You know, Chris, the power metrics are still, you know, underwhelming, but rest of the profile looks really good. So what are you taking away from what Stott has been doing lately?
Yeah, he's been really, really good. And I think this is just, you know, kind of who you can expect him to be moving forward. That's kind of who he was last year in that sense of, you know, he had 15 homers, stole 31 bases, put up a .280 average. But I'll tell you, the major difference this year is that Bryson Stott's getting on base a lot more via walk. He had a 329 OBP last year. This year, it's 393. The walk rate 6.1% to 14.7%. He's walking more than he's striking out, which is a good thing. It's almost too many walks in a way. Like, but he's getting on base. That's an encouraging sign. You kind of look and, you know, there's not a lot of like major indicators like why he's walking more. The chase rate is down 5%, but it's not like he was chasing a ton last year. 29% was relatively close to major league average. And so this year it's down to 24.2% currently. It's an interesting profile to look at. He is swinging less overall. He is whiffing a little bit more, but it's still a really good contact profile. At the end of the day, when I look at, you know, what's going on here with his profile, I think it's just Bryson Stott just maturing a bit. He's 26. He doesn't, yeah, you look at the bat speed. I know it's the flashy metric. Oh, he's got a second percentile bat speed at 67 miles an hour. It's okay. Like, he hits the ball at ideal launch angles and he makes a lot of contact and puts a lot of balls in play, meaning that I don't think Stott's going to be a huge power source. Like, yeah, I mean, 5 home runs so far. That's great. I'd bank on him getting 15 again. I think the 15's a reasonable benchmark. He got to it last year. And stolen base wise, he's stolen 12 so far, stole 31 last year. So, you know, we're looking really good there in that department. He is being efficient on the base pass. His sprint speed's good. He's taking the most of his opportunities. I think this is just kind of who Stott settles in to be. Yeah, he's a super flashy guy, but highly productive for second base. And you'll take the speed, you'll take the pop that you get, and it's going to come with a really respectable average, given the contact skills and the amount of balls that he puts in play. So, you know, I do think that Stott is here to stay. And I think that you can kind of just bank the stats at this point, looking at him. And he just looks like the guy that, you know, I mean, remember when we saw him in the AFL, what, 2021? He was like, all right, this guy was kind of not a big prospect, but he had that look about him. He played the game just at a different level. And it just looked like a guy that was just destined to be a solid major leaguer. And that's exactly what we've gotten so far. So that was really cool to kind of be there in the midst of his kind of coming out party, I guess, per se, is because his prospects, not all that before the AFL. And then it's kind of like, all right, I think this guy's got something here. So yeah, it's been fun to kind of watch him develop over the years.
Yeah. Like you mentioned, like, not a lot different this year to last year in terms of the metrics. You know, sprint speed is about the same as it was, but the reason why he's on a higher stolen base, you know, pace right now is that he's had more opportunities. I mean, he's getting on base at a clip 64 points higher than last year, and that's going to create you a lot of additional opportunities. I mean, you figure 64 points higher over 500 plate appearances is an extra 32 times on base. So that's, you know, probably with his speed, give you an extra 5, 6, 7 steals, and that's why he's on pace for, you know, about 38, 39 steals right now. So yeah, if you can get, I think 15 is realistic as well. I think he's right in that mid-teens range. Maybe 1 year he'll get up to 17, 18. Maybe that's this year. Other years maybe 13, 14, but always kind of in that range with, you know, 30 plus steals, 280-ish average. And if this version of Stott, you know, the more patient, it's not like he wasn't patient before. Like, he's still, you know, has a pretty low swing rate, you know, overall. You know, it did go down 5% this year, but, you know, first pitch swing, he's, you know, well below league average there. So it was like he got a lot more patient, but is drawing more walks overall, which is exciting. And he also dropped the K rate, which is already really low. He dropped it even more, down to 14.1%. And yeah, getting on base, you know, is obviously really good when you got that lineup around you there in Philadelphia. So yeah, I think in terms of second baseman, second base is kind of a weird position right now. I was looking at my rankings. Obviously, you got Mookie Betts, but he probably loses eligibility after this year. He's over at shortstop. Obviously, you still got Ozzie Albies, Jackson Holliday, but who knows, you know, what he gives you immediately. Semien, obviously, has been very good for a while, but he's almost 34 now. Altuve is a little bit older than that. He's been phenomenal this year. McClain's injured. You know, Ketel Marte is pretty good, but also on the other side of 30. Glaber's been on the, you know, downtrend this year at least. So yeah, Stott could be, you know, in that top five discussion at this position. I don't have him quite there yet, but he's definitely top 10 at this position, and definitely, you know, could be flirting with top five by end of the year for sure. The other middle infielder here, well, actually he's playing a little more third base this year, but the other infielder, I should say, Joey Ortiz, 25 years old from the Milwaukee Brewers. Kind of coming on lately. He doesn't have quite the stats that Stott has, but 5 home runs and 124 plate appearances, slashing .292, .387, .538, and really coming on here in the month of May. In May, .333, .391, .738, with 4 home runs in 46 plate appearances. And Chris, the numbers for Ortiz kind of across the board look really good, kind of in a similar way to Stott, where the power metrics aren't really that impressive, though they are better than Stott's are, in higher barrel rate, higher hard hit rates. But a guy that's walking almost as much as he's striking out, 13.3% walk rate, 16.7% strikeout rate, and making a lot of zone contact, 90% there, over 80% overall. Just doing a lot of good across the board. And I don't think he's getting enough love in fantasy. I think this is a guy that, if he keeps this up and keeps starting regularly, I mean, I don't have him there right now, but end of the year, it wouldn't surprise me if Joey Ortiz is in that top 100 overall discussion for dynasty leagues.
You know, Ortiz has all the skills. It's about playing time for him. And, you know, he had been very inconsistent with this playing time recently, until recently. And it's been encouraging to watch him kind of, I won't say break out, but at least look the part while getting the regular at bats. You know, over the month of May, things have been much better for him. He's hitting .333 this month with a .391 OBP and a .738 slug. Pretty impressive there. 4 homers. That'll play. I do think that, you know, there's some, like, he's going to steal bases. He has one this year. If he can get to 5 to 10, I think you're pretty happy. And, you know, while Ortiz is not a huge power threat, I do think that he's capable of getting there. He puts up pretty good EVs. I know the average EV this year kind of looks bland, but in the past, he's, especially last year, EVs took a major step forward in AAA and looked really, really good. I still think that this is a that is still developing and has a chance to be a really good bat in a pretty solid lineup that's getting better, in my opinion. I think the Brewers are only going to get better with a lot of young talent. And I think Ortiz is going to be a big part of that. There's a reason that, you know, they were willing to trade Corbin Burns for this guy and DL Hall because they really believed in the bat of Joey Ortiz. So I look at kind of the underlying stuff, and, you know, the major thing to me is they're just not hitting fly balls. It's kind of weird to see a 17% fly ball rate. That's really low. And, you know, he's hitting too many ground balls, 47%. It's not like outrageous, but it is a little bit high. But at the end of the day, I think that Ortiz makes enough contact. He is very disciplined hitter. I mean, right now the zone contact's 90%, the chase rate's 21.5%, and the overall contact rate's near 82%, which are all really, really good numbers there, like 85th percentile for all those. So you gladly take that from Ortiz, and if he continues to hit for average and get on base and he gives you some pop, like, I think where you draft him, you got to be happy, and I'd expect the performance to continue moving forward. Maybe not at that elite level, but still at a really good level.
Yeah, I think something like 20 home runs, 5, 6, 7 steals, .280 average, I think it's definitely possible. So hopefully they continue to play him. I mean, a lot of the other options they've tried out this year haven't really done a whole lot. And obviously he can move around. He can play second, third, short. I think that helps keep him in the lineup. And if he can continues to hit like this, yeah, I think he's going to continue surprising people. And at the end of the year, I mean, he might be, again, a top 100 player or close to it. And not many people probably saw that coming. Even the ones that were drafting him this preseason, I don't think anybody thought that he'd be, you know, a top 100 player this year. And I mean, it's still a long ways to go, and he's just now getting going. But a lot of the skills are there, and I think he's, you know, pretty legit for what we're seeing so far. Again, not a stud, but a pretty good player for sure. Out in Los Angeles, a little bit of a roster shakeup of sorts out there. You know, Jason Hayward's back. They brought up Miguel Vargas as well. Muncy went on the IL, and James Outman got demoted kind of in a Jordan Walker sort of way down to AAA. Let's start with Outman here, and then we'll get into Vargas here in a second. I mean, Outman was a very trendy pick. You know, both Chris and I talked him up on this show in the offseason and in spring training as well. I mean, he's coming off a 23 homer, 16 steal year, 86 runs, 248, 453, excuse me, 353, 437 slash line. But this year just couldn't get it going in 124 plate appearances, three home runs, two steals, 147, 250, 266 slash line. I mean, Chris, do you think last year was a mirage, or would you be looking to buy low right now on Outman, who's still only 27 years old?
It's so interesting. My fear is that when you're in an org like Los Angeles, it's hard to get a second chance. I mean, they breed talent, and yeah, I mean, Albin was good last year. He just didn't perform this year. I do think the kind of saving grace here is that he does provide value with his glove. He's a solid defensive center fielder, which does help. And I'm hoping that a stint in AAA kind of helps get him back on track, like reset button, get on the field, perform, get back to who he was. And, you know, I think that there is a possibility he could bounce back, but I think he's going to have to do it pretty quick. We've seen, you know, guys not get a lot of second chance in Los Angeles, and the strikeouts are still an issue. I mean, the strikeouts were an issue last year too, and they continue to be an issue this year. It's kind of affected him a lot more, which was a bit discouraging. The thing is, though, he was making much more contact. The zone contact rate was up 6 percentage points. And while it was still, you know, 79%, still slightly below average, a 6 percentage point improvement is worth talking about. And I think that's a big positive stamp you can put on it there. The overall contact rate, it was up over 4.5 percentage points. And while it was still bad, it was 14th percentile. Like, I think that's incredible. So I think there are still things to like about James Outman, but I do think that he's got to get back right and get back to the majors and prove something if he wants to stay with this team long term. So it is an interesting kind of buy. I think that you could get a decent buy low on him, because at this point, I think people think he sucks. Like, the conversations that I've seen with people and how people talk about him, I think they just think he's not going to be a thing, which does create a decent buying opportunity. So if you want to take that shot, like, I think that's a decent shot to take. See where it goes. If you have the space, I will say, I don't think that, you know, if it's a shallow bench, like, you don't need to rush out and get him. But if you have a deeper bench and can hold him, then all right, I may be interested there.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was going to say, because the perceived value on him is so low that I would go out and buy low. And that's not me giving like a massive vote of confidence that last year was legit, that he'll bounce back to that, or even if he'll get another shot soon. But just on the perceived value, it's a low risk move with potential for a solid, you know, return on investment here. So that's the reason why I'd go out and try to buy low right now. Do I think last year was a mirage? No. Will he get back up to there anytime soon? Probably also no. But, you know, there's decent power here. I mean, he's at least around like a league average power bats. You know, even this year, hard hit rates and EVs were right around league average, give or take. But he strikes out too much. You know, zone contact, you know, actually went up this year, still below average. But overall contact rates are below average, both zone and overall. But, you know, hits a good amount of line drive. So, like, the profile, like, you look at the surface slash line and you look at the profile, they don't quite match up. You'd imagine a lot worse stats. You know, there are some bad ones in there, but still some decent ones in there. And I do think he's going to bounce back, but who knows when that'll be. But if you can afford to stash him, like Chris mentioned, a little bit deeper benches, I definitely would do so. And then Miguel Vargas, you know, gets the call back up, and who knows how much he'll play overall, but was really, really good in AAA this year. He's one of the better hitters in the entire level. So far this year, had 8 home runs and 8 steals and 14 doubles as well in 39 games for Oklahoma City. More walks than strikeouts, 34-30, and was slashing 295, 437, 583. And obviously, the major league time has not gone well in 100 games. Only, you know, hit 8 home runs and 4 steals, but 190, 287, 346 slash line. Are you still, I mean, compared to, let's kind of like backtrack a year and a half or so to when, you know, the hype on Vargas was still, and the perceived value more so was still fairly high. Has your long-term outlook on him changed over the last year, you know, 12, 18 months or so? Would you buy low right now? Or are you kind of adjusting your expectations, so to speak?
You know, I honestly think that he was playing hurt last year. I think that played a big part in it. And we've seen him bounce back this year. He's looked really solid across the board. Like, all the underlying data is really good with Miguel Vargas. And I think there's opportunity for him now to get that shot to prove that he's just not a quad A guy, which kind of seems like what a lot of people think, because when I posted about him when he got called up and just posted the numbers and nothing else, no opinion, it was a bunch of comments. All there was a bunch of Miguel Vargas, and they put a four A's in his last name and a bunch of quad A. Like, dude, like, okay. I mean, this kid's still 24 years old. He's very talented. He's done a lot of good things. Yeah, I think that you look at the profile and say, all right, maybe he can succeed. The expectations maybe need to be tempered a bit. Like, we look at what he, you know, did at one point where he was ranked as a prospect. Like, maybe he's not going to be like this, you know, big power hitter that even could steal bases. Even though this year he did have 8 home runs and 8 stolen bases, he was also caught stealing 6 times. So not efficient on the base paths at all. But what Vargas does is he makes a lot of contact. He gets on base with really good plate discipline, and he does have some pop. I mean, I think he's got like league average. He could hit 15 to 18 home runs, and that'll play. So I think this is Miguel Vargas' shot to prove that, you know, he can be somebody. So we'll see. But yeah, I'm still interested in him.
I am too. And maybe we did go a little overboard. I mean, I think a lot of people had him top 20, top 10. I think he probably peaked around top 10 overall in my prospect rankings. And in retrospect, that was high. You know, hindsight's 20/20. Easy to say that now. But I still think there's a solid bat there. I still think there's, you know, around 20 home runs. He maybe gives you 8 to 10 steals and a solid average and an OBP as well. He's shown all those skills in the minor leagues. Again, not great power, but decent power. You know, a little bit of speed and athleticism as well, enough to not be a zero in that department, and a good feel to hit and a good approach to the plate as well. Like, I don't think those, you know, were fluky. I don't think those were a mirage. I think there was a lot of good there. And yeah, it's just been a rough go of it for him, especially last year, which was the only real, you know, big sample size we've had from him. But yeah, given how low the perceived value has dropped, I would look to buy low on him as well. And so far, since being recalled, he played on Saturday, got to start in left field, not in the lineup on Sunday. So again, I don't know, especially with Hayward back as well. I mean, Vargas has been playing really outfield this year. I know he can play some second base as well. I don't know how often he gets into the lineup. This might be like a Kierstad situation where it's only once every now and then. We shall see. But in the long run, I think there's still a pretty good player there. So I would look to buy low overall. All right. The last name in this section is the only pitcher so far, Luis Gil, who's coming off, you know, a dominant outing yesterday, had 14 Ks on Saturday. Yeah, it was the White Sox, but still 14 Ks is still really damn good. And overall this year in 9 starts, 2.39 ERA, 1.08 whip, and a 31.2% strikeout rate. A lot of red on that Savant page. But at the same time, I'm still a bit concerned with Luis Gil. I just look at that 13.6% walk rate, which is the second highest among all qualified starters so far. And you just don't usually see a ton of success over a long period of time with a walk rate that high. I mean, it does help that he's missing, you know, plenty of bats. He's not getting a lot of hard contact. So I'm not saying that he's going to completely fall off and be unusable, but I've seen some people talking about him as he's an ace or a top 20, top 25 dynasty arm. I'm just not there yet on him. Like I said, I still got a lot of concerns with that. He doesn't get a lot of chase either. He's only got a 24.5% chase rate, which is a bit lower, especially for a guy with that strikeout rate. You'd expect a higher rate than that, but again, a lot of good here. I mean, the four seam change, slider, all have a batting average against under 170. You'll take that. And they all have a whiff rate above 30%. We know he can miss bats. He's a fun pitcher, but that walk rate still really concerns me. And it's never been good. Like career 13.8% walk rate. So it's right. He's right in line with his career mark. So I'm a bit hesitant. He's definitely like a top 40 to 50 dynasty arm for me at this point, but I'm not ready to go, you know, top 25 or so. But are you, Chris? Like, where do you have Heel in your rankings, and kind of what are you taking away from this hot start to the season he's having?
I mean, it's hard to argue the results. I think that first and foremost, we have to say, like, he's pitched extremely well, and to make it work with a near 14% walk rate is also really, really impressive. I think that he's really benefiting from the fact that, you know, you look at his heat maps and, you know, pitch locations are really good. Like, he locates the fastball up in the zone well. He buries that changeup down and away. The slider command is a little bit inconsistent, but it's very, very solid. So I think that, yeah, I have been very skeptical, but when you're getting a 30% whiff rate on the four-seam, that speaks a lot of volume to me, because that's a very high whiff rate on a four-seam fastball, and then you're getting 30-plus on the change and the slider too. Now we're really talking when every pitch in your arsenal is getting at least a 30% whiff rate. So I think that in itself is pretty impressive. He's inducing some weak contact when he is allowing, you know, contact. The movement profile on his arsenal has kind of changed a bit too from what we've seen in the past. So that's interesting to watch. Man, I don't know. I've questioned, I've doubted, and I kind of wonder what's wrong for that. And I've discouraged people to kind of, you know, not be all in, but here we are. And he continues to perform and pitch well. And I think there's something here. Maybe not to this level, but I do think that Heel can be very solid moving forward, maybe a top 50 arm just due to the walks. And I think that there would be some potential positive regression coming, but maybe it's not all that much.
Let's play a little who you got here with some breakout pitcher names this year. Would you rather have, let's go, Luis Heel, or let's see, what's another good one here? Let's go with he's a little bit older, but Jack Flaherty. Who you got there?
Man, that's tough. Actually, Flaherty's he's been pretty solid. A little resurgent year for him, but I'll take Luis Heel. A little more confident in him, surprisingly.
What about Heel, or let's go, and not quite. Let's go Ranger Suarez.
I think I'd take Ranger Suarez. I think that his floor is very safe, and he's, you know, just kind of taking that step forward that I want to see, and I'm a little more confident because there's a little bit longer track record with Ranger.
We can go over to the division rival here. You got Heel, or let's all group them together. Heel or Cutter Crawford, and Heel or Tanner Houck.
I'll take Cutter, and on the Houck side, I actually think that's not a bad comparison there, even though I do think and kind of believe in the strides that Houck's made with his strike throwing. I might lean Houck here, but not by a lot.
Yeah, I have all three of them pretty close. Let's go last one here. Heel or Reese Olson?
Man, I love some Reese Olson. So long term, I'd probably lean Olson, but maybe this year it might be Heel.
Yeah, I'm pretty much there with most of those. Like I do have Heel a little bit ahead of Olson right now, but behind the two Sox arms, behind Suarez. I almost said Heel or Imanaga, but Imanaga's risen too high at this point.
Yeah.
But, and I have Flaherty ahead of Heel right now by a little bit. But yeah, he's kind of all in that range. And yeah, like I said, I'm buying into a lot of what Heel is doing. But again, that walk rate still gives me a bit of hesitancy. All right, let's go over to some minor league promotions here. We got a few notable ones. That none of these guys are huge names, so there are some top 100 guys in here or close to it, but figured we'd talk a little bit about these guys since there has been a little bit of a slowdown in terms of, you know, notable major league promotions over the last week or two. A couple going to AAA in the Mets org. You got Blade Tidwell, who I just saw recently, didn't look good, but he's looked pretty good the rest of the season. And then with the San Francisco Giants, you got big old Reggie Crawford going to AAA as well. I mean, Reggie Crawford's, you know, interesting, Chris, but as a reliever now, do you see any path to even like a saves holds format? Do you think Crawford's a guy that could provide some value at some point?
I don't know. He's really interesting. It's possible. Like, I wouldn't be shocked to see him. I mean, with how aggressive they've been, like, could he be up in the bullpen over the next couple months? I mean, wouldn't shock me. It's been an interesting development path for Crawford. I will say that. He is, when we saw in the AFL last year, hitter and a pitcher. They decide just go the pitcher route with him this year, but dude's a physical specimen. I'll say that. Like, he's a beast. And he hit some hard balls too in as a hitter in the AFL. Former first rounder. There's definitely pedigree. And in Connecticut, he was pretty solid two-way guy. So yeah, it's been kind of crazy how quickly they've pushed him this year, but he's handled it well. And yeah, maybe he does factor in the Giants bullpen sooner than later.
I mean, just look at Reggie Crawford. Like you mentioned, he's a physical specimen. Let's say he could be playing like outside linebacker or defensive end. Like, he's like Aaron Donald out there on a baseball field. He's a really, really strong, like in a good way, everything good. Like, you know, body's really good. Just really tall, obviously, 6'7". But yeah, I think he could. Like, he's got a good arsenal. He can miss bats. So will he ever be a closer? I don't know. But if you do play in saves holds, I think he could factor in there. Maybe he gets into some setup roles for them. Probably not this year, though he probably will be up this year. I just don't think he'll be in any high leverage situations this year. But long term, I can see him playing a factor in those leagues. But the other name here, Blade Tidwell. You know, I talked about him a good amount with Chris Blessing on the Eyes Have It podcast last week. Saw him a week before that, I believe it was. And it was really exciting because he was coming off a, you know, dominant outing. I think it was like 8 innings, 9 Ks, and either 0 or 1 earned the outing before that. And obviously, kind of a rising name. Glad I was, you know, getting into top 100 discussion. So I was really excited to see him. And he made it. He pitched into the third, did not get an out in the third because he had 5 straight hits to start the inning, 10 hits overall, which chased him. You know, but the arsenal was decent. You know, fastball in the mid 90s. You know, slider was a pretty good offering, but kind of a interesting offering because the velocity on it was such a wide range. Like, usually you see, for the most part, you know, these pit, you know, sliders have like a 3-4 mile an hour range from low end to high end on, and his was like 8 or 9. Like, I had some that are 80-81, others that are 80-89, to the point where I'm like, was that a cutter? I was questioning it, but had similar shape. It's obviously much different velocity, but I think it was still sliders, but it was just a weird look on Tidwell. I still like him long term. Still has some issues with command. He wasn't commanding much of anything well in that outing, so I'm not going super high on him. Like, I don't have him top 100 yet in mine, but he's top 150 for me. But what are your thoughts on Tidwell, Chris? Did you see him last year or at all? I can't remember.
No, I actually missed him. Have not seen him live, but like the arsenal in general, I do think he brings a lot to the table. And yeah, it's been interesting to kind of see his season so far this year. And I'm curious how he'll handle AAA. I think it's a good challenge for him at this point. I mean, Tidwell has been good dating back to his days at Tennessee. So yeah, it's been, it was kind of bad last year when he hit AA in the year to end the season. Like, I just missed him. Brooklyn was down here, I think, a couple of weeks after he had got the call, so I didn't get to see him. But this year, like I said, I think that you may have got his one really bad start. He allowed more earned runs in that one start that you had him than he has the entire rest of the season, which is crazy. Well, at least half. 5 in that and 10 earned runs on the year, which is crazy.
I believe it.
Yeah. So obviously that's a tough look to see that, but Yeah, I think that you look at the Arsenal and he's been rather good, I'd say. I think that the command is what it'll come down to. I mean, he's mid-90s on the fastball. It's an interesting kind of fastball shape, though. It's a not high-riding pitch. It can be on occasion. It just depends on the day. It's kind of inconsistent, as you had kind of noted to, I guess. Then you look at the rest of the Arsenal, and you know, I think that they're – he has the sweeper, and I wonder if he's differentiating like a sweeper and like a harder like gyro slider. Maybe I would have to kind of look at the pitch metrics on that a little bit more. We'll see. You know, it's first AAA start this year, but I actually found a note. So I think you're actually right. It's a note from Tidwell. It says this was an interview. He said, "I just got the cutter, which is kind of like a harder slider. Velo wise, it's about 88. So. That would make sense. He's throwing the cutter up in that range and the sweeper in the lower 80s. So, I don't know. I'm intrigued by Tidwell. He's like a borderline top 100 guy for me. And he has a chance, if he performs in AAA, to move up a little bit more, I'd say.
Yeah, that makes sense because he had a wider range on his slider coming in. Like it was 80 to 85 or so, which is a little wider, but still kind of within, decent range. But then he was on 80-89. I was like, what is this pitch? So thought about him in a cutter. So good to get that confirmation, because that'd be a wide range on one pitch, 80, like the whole 9 miles an hour. I still like him, but I'm not going too high on him yet. We also have a few notable promotions from high A to double A, the biggest one of which, Noah Schultz in the White Sox org. We also got Chandler Simpson down there in Tampa Bay, and Nolan McLean and Ryan Clifford with the Mets, among others. But these are the four we wanted to kind of focus on. Starting with Simpson, he's a really interesting player. Second-round pick back in 2022 out of Georgia Tech. One of the fastest guys in the minor leagues. I mean, last year, he had 94 steals in 115 games between low A and high A. And this year, he's already up to 31 in 31 games. With pretty good efficiency as well. Last year was caught 15 times, which seems like a lot in general, but when you attempted 109, it's a pretty good success rate, about 86%. And then this year only caught 5 times in 36 plate appearances, 36 attempts, as many walks as strikeouts, 15 of both, hitting 363 with a 432 OBP, but a 371 slug, 0.008, almost 0.007, 0.008 ISO, only one extra base hit all year. Like, this is a guy that, good contact, phenomenal speed, good approach. But we've seen these guys before. I mean, not to this extent that often, but does he impact the ball enough to be a guy that we can trust to roster in fantasy leagues, Chris? Like, I don't know. He's never hit a home run in his minor league career. He's up to 154 games. He had one in college, but that might have been inside the park for all we know. That was his last year at Georgia Tech. So what do you make of this in general of Simpson, but also guys like this, the speedsters with decent contact, but just a zero impact? How do you value those guys?
I don't know, but Chandler Simpson is a ton of fun to watch. I watched him beat out a routine ground ball to first base. And it wasn't even off like bounce or anything like that. It was like a decently hit ground ball right to the first baseman, and he literally beat it out. It was insane. He's got insane speed, as you mentioned. Simpson is so different because he makes so much contact. Like, he literally doesn't swing and miss at all. Like, it's crazy. He's 90% contact right now, and that's not even including bunts. So yeah, I mean, he bunts and gets on base. He slaps the ball over the field and gets on base. But I do think it is a tough profile to kind of evaluate for fantasy purposes, especially because, you need some power. By rostering this guy, pending that he's in the majors and performing, it almost hurts you in the sense where you're going to take a zero in the home run column. And if he gets hurt and you're relying on for stolen bases, it could really tank your team. So I think in general, I think Simpson is kind of an interesting guy. You mentioned he has one extra base hit this year, though, 44 singles and one double so far. many walks to strikeouts. I generally just tend to avoid this profile for fantasy because, you know, they typically don't always work. And it's work, then it's kind of a detriment on your home run total, at least. Like, you have to make up for it in a major way. And then normally when you're doing that, you're hurting your batting average with those other guys. So I don't know. I mean, Simpson's fun. We'll see what he does in double A. He's electric to watch, but for fans, not really all that interested.
Yeah, he's almost like a Juan Pierre type. And, you know, Juan Pierre was fun back in the day, and obviously stole a ton of bags, so he was helpful there. But, yeah, not getting a lot of impact. And, you know, Pierre had 18 home runs in his career in nearly 2,000 games. Who knows if Simpson would even get to that amount, because there's a couple of years that Pierre had 2-3 home runs. I don't know if Simpson can get to that. But, yeah, I try not to put a whole lot of stock into these guys. Like, Simpson is one where he can provide a lot of value with his legs, which is a different story. But these other guys that are, you know, high contact but just minimal power and speed overall, like Jacob Wilson, I don't put a ton of stock in. He's got at least a little bit of power. You know, Wade McClure, these types of guys, I'm like, they don't usually make an impact for fantasy more than, you know, being a waiver wire fill-in for a week or two because you have an injury. So don't really rate these guys too highly. Simpson's a lot of fun, but yeah, it's he's not going to help you in two categories right away. Home runs, RBI, nope, zero impact there. So you, best case scenario, you're looking at a three category guy, and it's just hard to rank those guys too highly when they're a zero for you and hurting you even in two categories, which is, you know, standard 5x5. That's 40% of your hitting categories and 20% of your overall categories. So kind of hard to rank those guys too highly, but the Mets guys here, Ryan Clifford, who was a pretty good riser last year, he had 24 home runs in 115 games, 262, 374, 480 slash line. That was between Houston and the Mets, went over, you know, in July to the Mets org. And this year has been really terrible. I mean, he's got 388 OBP. That's something. But outside of that, the rest of the stat line here looks pretty atrocious. He's walked 34 times, which helps, but striking out currently at a 33.5% clip, hitting 198 with one home run in 35 games. Just got the bump up to Binghamton, as we mentioned. But I don't know, is he being too passive at this point, Chris? I mean, the walk rate isn't like insanely high. I mean, yeah, it's 22.3%. Maybe that's too high, but it wasn't like it was like Nolan Jones levels from a few years ago. It wasn't like 27-28%, or even where Emmanuel Rodriguez is now in the upper 20s, but still pretty high. And maybe that is hurting him at this point. But, you know, what's your thought on Clifford now? I know we were both pretty, you know, fairly high on him last year, but just a completely different story so far this year.
Doesn't swing the bat at all, and that's really the issue. It's a 36% swing rate right now, and that's like bottom tier. For reference, though, Emmanuel Rodriguez is 31%, so you talk about not swinging the bat, and Emmanuel Rodriguez really does not swing the bat. And I think Clifford just gets deep into counts. He gets into pitcher's counts more often than not, and it's almost like he's kind of trying to make a living on the walks, and it's hurting him in a lot of other ways. Now, I think that Clifford at the same time, like, he's got power, but he needs to materialize it. Like, we need to see it in double A now. I mean, he had one home run and 136 plate appearances in high A this year. And the strikeout rate, as you mentioned, at near 32%, really high. And when you're walking at a 23.5% clip, that's too high too. Like, sure, he had a 412 OBP, but it doesn't really matter because there wasn't much else going on other than getting on base via walk. So, yeah, I'm a little nervous about Clifford, if we're being honest. Like, just looking at the swing rates, looking at how passive he is, he's also whiffing on, like, easy fastballs deeper. And I don't know if he's sitting on breaking balls and just completely, you know, whiffing on those. It's hard to say. But yeah, I think that it's almost a case where, you know, Clifford has been a completely different player since he was traded too. Like, he was great with Houston. And then I look, and since he joined the New York Mets system, it's been very very bad. I don't know if there's something that they tweaked that's kind of hurt him. They're pressing him to do something specific. I don't have a great answer to that, but I can look at and see is that, yeah, it's not been good since joining the Mets. So I am very concerned.
Yeah, that's a good point. I didn't even look at that last year because he was – so in low A last year, 25 games, hit .337 with a .488 OPP. Then he got the bump to high A Asheville, 58 games, hit .271. Power ticked up, though, hit 16 home runs there. And then when he got traded to the Mets in high A for them, 32 games, down to .188 with a K rate above 34%. And then it's just continued this year. So, yeah, that is actually really concerning. That is really when he got traded. And maybe it's just a comfortability thing. I don't know. But need to see him get it going soon because he's dropping down my rankings pretty steadily now. I mean, he was top 100 entering the year. Like in my March update, he was 93. So just in the back end of the top 100. But now he's kind of like in the 160-ish range. He's dropped, you know, a good amount each of the two updates since then. I want to see him because, you know, not at speed, guys, so you need the bat to be there. And right now it is not. So I think you could turn it around. So I'm not opposed to buying low if the price is right. But, yeah, definitely some approach issues here to work on. And then Noah Schultz, last one here. He's really intriguing, obviously, like I mentioned, one of the top pitching prospects in all the minor leagues. And he actually ranks among the minor league leaders in K minus walk rate. Don't love that he's in the Chicago White Sox org. I'll be frank about that. But you know, overall, you can't really fault the stat line so far. And he'll get a good test here in Double A for sure. A guy that's still only 20 years old. He won't turn 21 until the early part of August. So far in high A, he had a 3.95 ERA, but a whip under one, 0.92. And 42 strikeouts to 7 walks in 27 and a third innings. So that is a 6.4% walk rate and strikeout rate of 38.2%. So K minus walk rate of over 31%, looking really good. And Chris, I'm really, you know, encouraged by, you know, the amount of command and control he's shown. You know, he got at 6'9", kind of a lanky, you know, about three, he's basically Chris Sale, but like 4 inches taller than Chris Sale. So you thought, you know, maybe he'd have a hard time kind of honing in that command and control, but only 13 walks so far in 54 innings as a professional, which is really encouraging. I mentioned that 6.3% mark this year for the walk rate. So yeah, I think he's got the stuff to be, you know, he's already top 10 pitching prospect for me and could be, you know, some guys graduating. Could be top five or maybe even top three by end of the year. But what are your thoughts on Schultz here?
Yeah, he's a lot of fun. Saw him last night or Saturday night, I guess two nights ago as you're listening to this now. He commands so well. That's what really stood out to me. He probably didn't have his best stuff last night. Didn't get a lot of swings and misses, but he still struck out 4 over 4 innings. He's been babied a lot by the White Sox, limited him to 4 innings. I'm curious now if they kind of let him go a little bit in Double A. Maybe, maybe not. But I think this is kind of one of the cases where they're just like, hey, let's stay out of the way and let Noah Schultz do his things. He's really good. It's 95, 96 mile an hour fastball from a very high release point, tough slot, sweepy slider. It's very strong pitch, gets a lot of whiffs, and he locates well, like front door, back door, like he kind of does it all. Jump he throws as well. He has that to throw to right-handed batters, which is extremely helpful too. So, you know, at the end of the day, I think that Schultz has that potential to be a high-end starter. If worst case, he's a high leverage reliever. He's got the stuff. And I think that he was bored in high A. High hitters couldn't do anything with his stuff. So I think that he'll now get a pretty good test in Double A, and we'll get to really see what he's made of.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think this was a good test for him. So I definitely welcome this this bump here. And looking at just my overall pitching prospect rankings, there's only 5 that I can, like, you know, 100% say, or close to 100% say, I would take over him. Obviously, Skeens, obviously. Jackson Jobe, Cade Horton, and I have Painter and Scott ahead of him as well. Outside of that, I can make a case for him a number six, and maybe he's actually pretty close with Christian Scott, but you know, he's in the same tier as, you know, Robbie Snelling, Tiedemann, Rhett Lauder, Tink Hans, Kirsten Waldrop, you know, both the Myers, Owen Murphy. I might like him more than all of them. Like right now, I might put him as my number six pitching prospect, and definitely could be top five here sooner rather than later. Maybe even gets ahead of Scott and Painter and gets up into that four spot. And then, you know, once Skeens graduates in a few months, he'll be, you know, top three. But yeah, a lot to like here with Noah Schultz for sure. All right, moving on to three up, three down. Again, the hitters this week, starting with Brennan Davis. Again, these are all holy stats from the last, you know, 7-10 days or so. Remember Brennan Davis when he was, you know, a top 25 or so fantasy prospect and then had a couple of really tough years, both in terms of performance and durability, especially durability, you know, back issues that kind of kept flaring up, but he's crushing the ball. He has 7 home runs over the last 8 games. In the last 10 days, he's slashing .480, .629 with a .1360 slugging percentage. Like, that's not OPS, that's slugging percentage. And on the season here for AAA, pulling up his stats now. He's slashing .279, .439, .689 in 22 games with 8 home runs. And, you know, steal, 14 walks to 19 strikeouts, excuse me. I mean, it's been a really rough couple of years for him. Hit .201 last year in 71 games, .180 before that in 53 games. Again, he hasn't played a lot over the last couple of years. So it's really been since 2021 when he had some buzz around him. Still only 24 years old. So do you think this is Brennan Davis, you know, that appears to be fully healthy, getting back on track? Would you look to buy low? Where are you at on Davis right now?
I really think it's a mirage. He's been a lot of fun. It's been a great story to talk about, but at the end of the day, he's not making any contact at all. Like, his end zone contact rate's 64%. His overall contact rate's 60.7%. Those are bottom barrel of AAA right now. And it's a little bit concerning to me. Yeah, he's hitting the ball hard, so that's obviously been fun to see. Like 93 hour average EV, 113.7 max the other day, but way, way, way too much swing and miss for my liking. So I wouldn't be shocked if it kind of came plummeting back down. Everybody's kind of buying back in right now, and I just don't really believe it, honestly. I just don't think he can make enough contact to sustain. And for that reason, I'm out.
So not buying back into Davis, huh?
Nope. I'm just glad to see him healthy. I will say that. I think that It's been great to see him just back on the field and healthy at the end of the day.
Yeah, no, I'm there with you. I was never, even when a lot of people were high on him, I was always a little bit lower, I think, than most. So I'm not really buying back in. I mean, if he's, you know, free and you can just pick him up, which you probably can, depending on your league depth, I won't be opposed to it to see where this goes. But yeah, in general, I'm not like running to the waiver wire to get a guy like Brennan Davis. First down is Spencer Jones. You know, tough to see him struggling like this, but he struggled pretty hard last year, early in the year. You know, he's a California kid playing in the Northeast right now. Maybe that plays into a little bit of it, but you better get used to it because, you know, is a, you know, team that he's going to be playing on the major level is in the Northeast, so not exactly Southern California. But over the last 10 days, 42 plate appearances, slashing .167, .262, .167 with a 38% strikeout rate. And really for the season, it's been tough overall. .222, .298, .333, 40 strikeouts in 27 games in Double-A Somerset. Are you just chalking this up, Chris, as another early season kind of struggle for him? Last year, he turned it on a lot in the second half of the season. Do you still have him ranked pretty high? What are your thoughts here on Jones?
He's a really tough one now to kind of get a good feel for. You know, he's shown flashes. It's, you know, the big home runs that kind of steal the show on social media. And then it's a lot of strikeouts that people don't really talk about. I think that with Jones, I know he was hurt early in the year. I would say at this point, he should be pretty past that. You know, we're over a month since he came back, and the results really haven't been all that much better. And, you know, the last time he hit a home run was on April 23rd. So for have that kind of power and not get to the home run power is a little bit concerning. He's still on bases. That's great. He's striking out a lot. I don't know. It's a interesting profile to me where he still needs to show some more. And I think that all the upside's there. The tools are there to dream on. But at the end of the day, man, you got to make contact. And you know, right now, that's one thing that he is not doing well. There's been no contact to speak of in the profile. It's down to 61.8% this year. Not good at all. I need to see a major turnaround and see one pretty quick.
Yeah, no, I'm right there with you. I mean, it's so tough to drop him too far because we saw him turn it on last year as the temperatures got warmer. We know what he's capable of. I've seen him live. I've seen him hit a towering home run. I know that upside is there. But yeah, it's really hard to keep him like top 20 right now. He's fallen out of my top 20. He was in the teens to start the year. I mean, I haven't dropped him too low. He's still top 30 for me, but kind of in a range of a pretty, big glutton of outfielders like Roman Anthony, Kjerstad, Jordan Beck, guys like that. He's fallen into that range, but still holding on hope. But yeah, it's been tough so far. For Jones, our second up here is Carson Williams, who I think is getting into top 10 overall fantasy discussion here. 20 years old still, turned 21 late in June. Spent the entire year so far at Double A Montgomery. 7 home runs, 10 steals, and 12 doubles in 32 games. Slashing 346, 426, 631. He's cut the strikeout rate from 31.8% last year down to 24.3% this year. Very encouraging there. Still walking a decent amount as well. So a lot of, encouraging improvements so far this year, and just a really fun fantasy-friendly profile in general with, above average to plus power and speed. I mean, I don't know when he's up. I don't know if he's up, this year. Maybe he gets a, late season cup of coffee, but more so a 2025 impact guy. But just given how, we've already had so many promotions already and a lot of the other guys that were kind of in that range, for me, Amador, Spencer Jones, et cetera, some other guys that have fallen off. Matt Shaw's had a rough year as well. I think Williams is right up in that range and could be top 10 soon. But where are you at on Williams now?
Yeah, he's certainly legit. I think that the improvements on contact against breaking balls is carrying him a long way. What was really good power, speed, and athletic profile at that? I mean, he showed some really good skills last year when I saw him. And then I saw him again in spring training this year in the backfields, and I saw that. I saw the improvements against breaking balls, and it's like, all right, maybe this is it. And sure enough, I think that he's kind of bringing that all into fruition. It's a 2020 profile. I mean, last year he was 23-20, so obviously that was obviously a big deal for him. And then I think that really the power is only going to materialize and get better. Because he's young, he's still got a frame that you can kind of dream on. So, yeah, I'm betting on Carson Williams to, hit enough to get in that power speed consistently. And I'm really excited about this profile.
Yep, as am I. I think he could even be 25-25. I think he's definitely got that power and speed. And over the last week, or last 10 days, 424, 568, 939 with 9 extra base hits, 3 home runs, and 3 steals. So yeah, doing a lot of everything across the board so far this year while improving the K rate as well. Our second down here is, well, actually we already talked about him, Ryan Clifford. I didn't realize we had him on here twice. So Clifford was our second down, but it's we can kind of slot another guy in here, Cam Fisher, who is kind of another name we wanted to include in the three up, three down. Cam Fisher is, to say the least, having a rough month. When I was looking for guys to put on the list here, I saw that he was having a pretty rough month. I mean, he had 0 hits over the last 10 days, but I didn't realize it extended back to the entire month of May, including today. He's 0 for 44 with 30 strikeouts and 58 plate appearances in the month of May. Chris, you saw him right at the beginning of this kind of fall off. What were your thoughts on Fisher? Do you think this is, do you think he's going to be fantasy relevant ever, or is there just too much swing and miss in the profile?
Yeah, he's not making enough contact at all. And he took four walks in the game. I saw him. He had this moonshot, though. I mean, it was mashed. It was ended up being ruled foul, which I think it was fair. There's no video feed in Asheville at all, so you can't really see. And yeah, my camera angles couldn't tell either, but I was pretty convinced it was fair. But aside the point, he has not had a hit since then or the couple days before then either. So Fisher, very passive. He's going to take a lot of walks. He's got big boy power when he connects, but right now it's a 58% contact rate. So I'm kind of thinking that he may be kind of irrelevant before long. And that is not at all. Yeah. Just looking at that, I'm highly concerned about the long-term outlook for sure. Just given the fact that he is striking out as much as he is, he's making so little contact. Like it's really hard to see.
Yeah, sub 60% contact rate is just not good. That ain't gonna get the job done for sure. All right, our last up here for this episode is Josue De Paula with the Los Angeles Dodgers, who had a slower start to the season, but really picked it up over the last week or two. And over his last 10 days, four home runs and a 303, 415, 727 slash line. Those are actually the first four home runs he's hit of the season. He had zero through his first 28 games. But he does have nine doubles as well, slashing 257, 352, 486. This is a guy that hit for high average both of his first 2 years in the DSL in 2022 and in low A last year, which is where he's repeating this year. Skipped the complex level altogether, but didn't really hit for a lot of game power last year, had two home runs. So nice to see him get this little bit of a home run, you know, barrage over the last week or so. You know, Chris, as a guy that's probably going to provide not a lot in the stolen base department, but he does have four this year. He had 14 last year. I don't think anybody really projects him to be much of an impact there. So you really need that bat to be there, both in terms of average and power, to be kind of an impact guy that a lot of people hope that he can be. Do you think that kind of hitter is still in there? I mean, the power hasn't really shown up too much yet, kind of more of a projection thing, but where are you at now on De Paula?
He's so interesting. I think that the contact skills have regressed like each of the last 3 years, like since he was in the DSL. Like you look at the contact numbers, like when I first saw the DSL numbers, I was like, all right, like we got a certified dude on our hands coming stateside. And then last year, while it was still good, like there was some regression. And then this year, the contact rate is running at 71%. I'm going to go back and get the last 2 years to kind of confirm my thoughts here, but I'm almost certain that he was, you know, off the charts good in 2022. He was a 91% zone contact and an 85.3% overall in 2022. So DSL numbers like this, why we take them with a grain of salt, because things like this happen and you look at it and it's like, oh man, like regression kind of came. It's not that he regressed per se. It's like, it's just a lot harder to hit as you move up the levels. Like DSL is a lot different than, you know, stateside ball, just is what it is. And then last year contact was 76.6%. And this year I mentioned down to 70.6. So pretty hefty drops the last 3 years. And you can see it's reflective in the strikeout rates. He's striking out at a near 27% clip this year. And while it has been fun to see the, you know, outburst of home runs this past week, four in the last 4 days, I think I'm a little more skeptical just given the contact skill regression. Like, is he just swinging for the fences more often? Like, is he just trying to hit the ball hard in the process? Like, is he striking out more? Yeah, I think that that's kind of an investigation I do on De Paula. 18 years old, though. I mean, at the end of the day, like, we're talking about a kid that's incredibly young still. He will turn 19, maybe, if you're listening to this. His birthday is May 24th. So if you're listening later in the week, it might be DePaula's birthday. But aside the point, you know, it's a fun profile to kind of dream on. But I do have my questions. And I had him outside of my top 100 by one spot last update. And it kind of grinded people's gears. Like, a lot of people were like, it's invalid list because you don't have him in the top 100. Like, I got that on Reddit. Of course, you know, Reddit is Reddit. But, you know, I think that borderline spot's a pretty sweet spot for him.
I love those. This list is you know, not, you know, legitimate because of this comment. So it might be my favorite or one of my favorites. I got one of those recently. I did a post probably 4 or 5 days ago at this point of my top ranked, I think it was my top ranked hitting prospects under the age of 20. And I got a comment just like that, like, oh, this whole thing is just, you know, illegitimate just because you don't have Jackson Churio. And I was like, all right, number one, he's no longer a prospect. And number two, he's not 19 or younger anymore. So it was funny. It wasn't even like accurate. I mean, yeah, if I didn't have Churio in there, yeah, that would be illegitimate. But I'm like, yeah, he doesn't really fit into this anymore for multiple reasons. So those ones always make me laugh. But yeah, it's been really interesting over the last few seasons for DePaula, what type of player he's going to be. Not a guy that provides a lot of speed. So you got to hope the bat is there. And yeah, I think there's some question. I think it could be. I mean, it could be an impact bat. And I know some people have him ranked like top 50 right now. I'm not quite there. I've kind of held pack with him in the back end of my top 100. But hopefully this power surge is for real and he can kind of get the contact back up to where it was or even close to it. But we'll see. He's still a very interesting one. And, you know, he's a Dodgers prospect. So, you know, you got to hold a hope that they can kind of figure him out because he's a fun talent for sure. The last down here, Aroldis Martinez, a guy that was, you know, in my prospect to stash article every week on Mondays that I do, which will be out again today when you listen to this episode over on Roto Baller. I've had him ranked pretty highly in that top 25 just because he had been hitting well and looked like his call up was getting closer, but don't think that's the case anymore, at least not imminent, because after a 3-hit game to start the month of May, he has gone 5-for-50 in his last 15 games. Not striking out a ton, you know, only 12 strikeouts in those 15 games, excuse me, and a guy that doesn't really strike out a ton in general, but it's really struggling lately. Chris, are you making anything of this? Do you think we moved him too high in our rankings? Kind of, what are your thoughts on his struggles here over the last few weeks?
I mean, it's interesting. I almost wonder if he's just pressing too hard, trying to get the call. Yeah, I mean, it was kind of some speculation swirling several weeks ago that he would get that call up to the major, and obviously it didn't happen. And now we've seen some struggles, as you mentioned. He was really hot early on and tapered off, but you know, the underlying data still looks pretty good on him. The overall contact rate's not great, but he makes up for it in the zone at 82% in zone, 66% overall. That's below the threshold that I'd like to see, but he's chasing not a lot of pitches out of the zone. He's barreling the ball up at, you know, really high rates too, which is an encouraging thing to see. At the end of the day, I do think that he probably bounces back, but you know, I think that he's just kind of pressing a little bit and he too much. Maybe he can get back on track next week and we'll see. I was hopeful that he would get a call soon, but right now I think he's kind of played his way out of that, but maybe he's a couple of months away. We shall see.
Yeah. My long-term thoughts haven't really changed at all because of this last 2 weeks. You know, like I said, I've been a guy that's been lower than most. You know, I went probably too low on him, admittedly, you know, last year, and I've kind of corrected that this year. So I think he's a decent bat. Like, I don't think he's going to be a great, you know, high impact bat. Like, I don't think he's going to be, you know, hitting 290 with 35 home runs or anything like that. But I still think he's going to be solid in both of those areas. And yeah, maybe this year I'll probably, you know, drop him down my stash rankings a little bit here because, yeah, I don't think that promotion is imminent. But that is going to wrap us up. Thanks to everyone for tuning in again this episode. We hope you enjoyed it. Make sure to check out the DynastyDugout.com, ToolShedFantasy.com, and Rotoballer.com. And we'll be back with you again later on this week. But until then, everyone take care.
Lowe's knows you've got a job to do, and we help get it done. With the MyLowe's Pro Rewards program, eligible members save more. With volume discounts on qualifying orders through a quote of $2,000 or more. Join for free today. Lowe's, we help you save. Offer can't be combined with any other discount, contract, and or special pricing. Exclusions, more terms, and restrictions apply. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.